All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
The other rights remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to an attorney prior to or during any question. If you can't afford one, the court will appoint one for you. Do you understand your rights?
And the wolf is at your door.
Warning, this episode of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast may contain descriptions of acts of violence or that of a sexual nature. It should be for people that are 18 years or older. Heed my warning, people. I do not get the facts of these cases off of the internet or from some television show. The facts I'm retelling you were presented to me by the victims of the crimes or the perpetrators who committed the crimes against the victims. My descriptions of the crime scenes, what I saw with my own two eyes. If you're going to get offended, please turn this podcast off now. Thank you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast. As always, I'm your host, Woody Overton, and we are going to be continuing the state versus Scott Peterson, scorched AF. And finally, we've been through the whole prosecution side of the trial, the 189 or 190 something witnesses. And now we're going to give you Scott Peterson's defense side. Now the prosecution is rested. It's the defense's turn to put on their testimony to say that Scott Peterson's innocent, which I don't think he is, but that we wouldn't be talking about it had they fucked it up so bad. So, love and appreciate each and every one of you. And thanks for listening to the longest running series I've ever done. Evidently y'all love it, and because you're still following it, and I can see it in the numbers, but let's get started. So we're back in court, and the first thing that happens, this is on Monday, October the 18th. And the first thing that happens is Garagos had filed a motion to have the whole case thrown out. When the prosecution got done, he's like, Your Honor, here's the motion to dismiss. Prosecution, didn't prove it beyond a reasonable doubt or whatever. And Judge DeLucci denies the defense's motion to dismiss and said the prosecution had, in fact, met the burden of evidence sufficient to withstand an appeal if the jury came back with a guilty verdict. All right. So then, that's typically all they do that in every case, right? It's a free shot and thinking maybe the judge is going to say, fuck it, and throw it all out, but not in this case. So the defense, Mark Garagos, calls their first witness, Mr. Carl Jensen, who is a private investigator. And Mark Garagos is doing the direct examination, and David Harris with the DA's office is going to cross-examine him. Now, y'all, PIs, and I've done it a lot in these cases, I still do it as an expert witness. I don't call myself a private investigator. But anyway, they go in and they look at everything, right? And you try to poke holes in the theories of the prosecution. And then when the prosecution has, you know, DA investigators and like Modesto Police Department evidently has 40 fucking detectives to follow up on all the shit, the defense will bring in a hired gun like me. And I would only take the case off if I thought the people were innocent. But the, and they get the chance to poke holes into all the theories. And so let's begin with it. So first thing Jensen testifies about, and I told y'all about it again, is that Carmel trip the family went on, and they talk about how far it was that she had to walk and that Lacey had to walk, and, you know, the distance between the Normandy Inn and the shopping mall where Lacey and Jackie shopped, just like 3/4 mile away, and all that. So basically what they're trying to say is she wasn't so pregnant that she couldn't be walking in the park that day and get abducted, right? And yeah, they talked about the steep incline from the bench to from the beach to the water's edge and all that stuff. Well, Cross Harris asked if there were parking lots at the shopping mall. So yeah, of course there are, and he insinuated that Lacey could have drove there instead of walked. All right, and this guy Jensen testified about the concrete samples from the driveway, and it's just all bullshit. Jensen described the time frame and the process he used to collect the sample from the driveway to send to be tested, and when he attempted to remove a piece with the shovel, it broke up in a bunch of different pieces, but all the pieces were sent, right? So they introduced the photo albums containing the concrete photos and the samples and the photo of the fence with a concrete mix bag. These are all exhibits. The driveway of the house and the close-up of the cement in the front of the house without a car and driveway in the front of the house with a car and driveway. Whatever, right? But that's what they got to do. Got to try to poke holes. Now, they're done with him. Then the judge Delucci gives instructions to the jury. And they do this, y'all, only after they would have had hearings on about whatever it is that's coming up and what can be allowed to be said. It won't be biased to the jury and vice versa. So the judge says, and I'm going to quote this for you. He gave these instructions to the jury. Before you call Mr. Gebler, I want to instruct the jury about expert testimony to sort this out. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I'm going to instruct you. You're going to hear this instruction again before the case is submitted to you. But we have had testimony of all these different experts. Now I'm going to give you a jury instruction to help you assess the testimony of these experts, so you have some direction when you're trying to decide what weight you're going to give the testimony of each expert that may be called to testify. This is the instruction. What it says witnesses who have special knowledge, skill, experience, training, or education in a particular subject have testified or will testify to certain opinions. Now, y'all, again, any expert that's called in a court, naturally, they did partake in the crime. So they're only giving their opinion based off of their knowledge that they've gained over the years, but not their opinion about what possibly could happen, we'll leave it like that. But continuing on the statement, he says, this type of witness is referred to as an expert witness. In determining what weight to give any opinion expressed by an expert witness, you should consider the qualifications and believability of the witness, the facts or material upon which each opinion is based, and the reasons for each opinion. Now, an opinion is only as good as the facts or reasons on which it is based. If you find that any fact has not been proved or has been disproved, you must consider that in determining the value of the opinion. Likewise, you must consider the strengths and weaknesses of the reasons on which it is based. You're not bound by an opinion. Give each opinion the weight you find it deserves. You may disregard any opinion if you find it unreasonable. Now, this instruction applies both to the prosecution experts and the defense experts you will be hearing from. Okay, and then it goes on, and they take morning recess, and they pick up with defense witness number two, Stephen Howard Gebler, who's an engineer in Construction Technology Laboratories Incorporated. All right. And again, Garagos is doing the direct and David Harris doing the cross. Now, Gebler basically testifies, he examined the concrete samples collected by Jensen and also took two of his own samples. And he said that the concrete in the driveway and the anchor and the concrete debris on the trailer and on the boat cover match, which refutes the testimony by the prosecution's concrete expert that the concrete in the driveway did not match the other three. Whatever, right? And they enter an exhibit, had a binder with photos, seeing the concrete, and another exhibit, a box of approximately 17 bags of concrete picked up from the driveway at the house. And another exhibit was a plastic bag containing whatever. It's all semen shit, y'all. All right. At least they're moving a little faster.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? I know Sydney was, and if you're a woman, you're definitely not alone. There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now, found in our food, water, and even in our skincare products. These disruptors can wreak havoc on our hormones. Believe me, before Hormone Harmony, I watched Cindy suffer. Not anymore. Hormone Harmony's formula, made only with herbal ingredients, have reduced Cindy's hormonal symptoms, and it helps women of all ages. Then there are the natural hormonal changes our bodies face, such as menopause. While these processes are part of life, they don't have to be uncomfortable. The good news is that you don't have to suffer through it any longer. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts known as adaptogens, designed to help the body cope with stressors, including those chaotic hormonal fluctuations that can disrupt your daily life. Whether it's PMS symptoms like irritability and cravings, or menopause symptoms such as hot flashes and night sweats, Hormone Harmony can help with it all. Happy Mammoth, the creator of Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to improving women's lives by using only high-quality, science-backed ingredients. They make no compromises on quality, ensuring that you receive the best support possible. This isn't just a supplement. It has become a phenomenon. Women are talking about it everywhere, with a bottle of Hormone Harmony sold every 24 seconds. And the most important benefit, women express feeling like themselves again, a sentiment echoed in over 30,000 positive reviews. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code RLRC at checkout. That's happymammoth.com. Don't forget to use the code RLRC for 15% off today.
We all know I love me some tacos. They're great every night of the week, not just Taco Tuesday. But Cindy really wants me to eat healthier this year, and Factor chef-made gourmet meals have made eating well easy. Factor arrives fresh and fully prepared, perfect for my busy lifestyle. With 40 options across 8 dietary preferences on the menu each week, it's easy to pick meals tailored to your goal. Calorie smart, protein plus, or keto, Factor has it all figured out. My favorite meal has been the jalapeno sweet corn polenta and chicken. Imagine a whole chicken breast marinated in lemon juice, garlic, and smoked paprika, grilled until juicy and topped with a zesty salsa verde. It's served over a creamy Parmesan polenta loaded with diced jalapenos, corn, mozzarella, and scallions. Bell peppers, red onions, and cauliflower are served on the side with fajita spiced butter. It was delicious and nutritious. Eat smart with Factor. Get started at factormeals.com/factorpodcast and use Factor Podcast to get 50% off your first box plus free shipping. That's code FACTORPODCAST at factormeals.com/factorpodcast to get 50% off plus free shipping on your first box.
Defense witness number three, James Anthony Cavallaro, Brits Fertilizer Company, I guess. Mark Garagos is doing a direct examination and Rick D'Estacio is doing the cross examination. Now, Cavallaro testifies that he sent Trade Corp a check for products purchased on November the 7th of 2002. And a few days later, he received a call from a check cashing company, one to verify the check. The payee had been changed on the check. And after seeing the community type mailbox Trade Corp's had in mid-November, Cavallaro advised Scott to get a P.O. box. And when Lacey disappeared, Calvero called the tip line to report the stolen check incident. But scorched, he wasn't called back. He wouldn't have been on the stand had they done their fucking jobs. Scorched on you, Modesto. All right, moving on. Defense witness number four, Martin Laffer, who's a CPA, certified public accountant. And Garagos is doing the direct, and Harris is on cross. So Laffer testifies, Martin Laffer, he's a CPA and a former criminal investigator for the FBI. And he reviewed the report and testimony provided by the Modesto City auditor who testified for the prosecution. Now, Laffer said Scott had no legal responsibility for trade court's finances and that he and Lacey were not living beyond their means and were, in fact, sitting pretty. He could not see any evidence of financial motive for Scott to murder Lacey and Connor. Okay. Whatever, right? Everybody has the right to a defense. They can say what they want to say. There's nothing I don't think that, you know, the prosecution could have done to preempt this guy, I guess. So let's move to Tuesday, October 19th. And again, defense witness number four, Martin Laffer, the CPA, is back on the stand. Now, Garagos continues to direct the examination of him. And he asked him questions about the corporate structure of SAPEC, which is a private investment company that wholly owns Trade Corp, Inc. and Trade Corp USA. And he reviewed the California Department of Justice Manfield's analysis of Scott and Lacey's financial situation and his testimony, the investigation into possible embezzlement, and the misappropriation conducted by Modesto City Auditor Nienhuis, and the testimony by Brent Rocha on the value of the various parts of the Rocha estate and when each would be distributed. And he concluded that Trade Corp's financial situation was irrelevant to Scott's financial condition. I guess they figure Scott's going to get us, as long as he's got his paycheck, they didn't make a fuck what Trade Corp's did wrong, right? And Scott had no financial benefit from Lacey's inheritance if she was out of the picture. Now, the Cross Harris notes several factors that were not included in information from Mansfield and Nienhuis, and Laffer gave an opinion on whether they would affect his conclusion about Scott and Lacey being in a good financial position, but noted his intent was not to do a thorough investigation, but to look at what the prosecution witnesses did. I don't know, y'all. He's just saying if there's anything that's scorched on my part, then it's not my fault because I didn't do the actual investigation. You know, if they fucked it up, I'm looking at what they did or didn't do. And they enter exhibit D8L, which is summary of income expenses and the testimony of Douglas Manfield. All right. Holy smokes. We're rolling. Defense witness number five, Timothy Phillips, the East Bay Regional Park District officer. Again, Garagos is doing the direct and David Harris is doing the cross. So Phillips testifies that he is an officer with the East Bay Regional Park District and responded to the call on April the 14th, which reported human remains along Point Isabel shoreline. And because of an early recess and because of an alternate juror's illness, Phillips had only had time to provide some background information on where various items of fabric and tarp were found in relation to the body and the Hoffman Channel. And, y'all, they ended up dismissing court early that day because jury member number five was ill. I guess that happens when you're in court for five fucking months. Somebody's got to get sick later, sooner or later. Move to the next day, Wednesday, October the 20th. And y'all, they held a meeting in chambers with the court and Mark Garagos and Pat Harris and the defendant and Michael Cardoza and Laren Johnson and the court reporter. And the court orders report They sealed the meeting. Oh, it doesn't matter. But the court imposed a gag order on Mr. Cardoza and said it would be in full force and effect as if he was one of the counsel, and it would be at the same time and the same kind of gag order that applies to Garagos and any other party. So the gag order results from Cardoza's media interviews he did, in which he discussed a mock cross-exam he had with Scott Peterson. Judge Lynch said this placed him under attorney-client privilege, which then required him to be underneath the gag order. All right. Back to defense witness number five. Remember, homie didn't get to finish testifying because juror number five was sick. Phillips describes in detail, that's Timothy Phillips, East Bay Regional Park District Officer. Phillips described in detail the fabric items and tarp that were found near Lacey's remains on April the 14th. The focus of his testimony was on the decomposing scent he noted in the tarp. And this, he said this is the same scent he noted with Lacey's remains. Now, Garagos asked a lot of questions about the Hoffman Channel and the marshy area between Point Isabel Park and Highway 850. Phillips said that the area is closed after 10 p.m., but he frequently sees transients there during the night and early morning hours, and a portion of the area is used as homeless encampments. Phillips also noted that the water level in the Hoffman Channel rises and falls with the tide. Now, David Harris asked Phillips about the decomposing smell on the tarp compared to Lacey's remains, and Phillips' last words of testimony were, to him, the smell was the same. They're trying to say that that was a tarp that Lacey's body was wrapped in. Could have been. I don't know. But I tell you this, if it was anywhere near her body, everything in the area stunk to fucking high hell. I've smelled them. Floaters are probably the worst smell that you can have. Y'all, look, they did exhibits D8M2-18. They did 18 exhibits. I'm not even going to tell you about it. It's plastic bags and fabric, blah, 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 blah. All right, moving on. Defense witness number six, Ronald Robert Seitz, who's the dog handler. And again, it's Garagos on direct, Harris on cross. Now, Seitz is a member of CARTA and the chief of the Alameda County Search and Rescue Team. And he was called by CARTA, whoever that is. I guess it's California Rescue, whatever. CARTA to participate in the searches using the dogs at Berkeley Marina on December the 28th. And he testified his dog, TJ, like Anderson's dog, Trimble, is a trailing dog. And given the choice of the sunglasses case and the pink slipper to use as a scent article, he chose the slipper. These are items they took from Lacey's house. He said glass cases tend to be handled more by other family members, whereas slippers are not. Call that a little speculation. He worked his dog in the area above the launch ramp for about 1 to 1.5 minutes, and the dog did not pick up a scent.
March is Sleep Awareness Month, the perfect time for you to think about the quality of your sleep and how the mattress you choose can make all the difference. Avocado Green Mattress is committed to providing mattresses that not only help you sleep better, but also are healthier for you and the planet. Did you know that with the right mattress, you can improve your sleep quality by up to 50%? If you're not waking up refreshed and ready to tackle the day, it might be time to consider Avocado and their sleep-enhancing design. Cindy and I love Avocado for so many reasons. Not only are the materials organic and free of chemical and toxins, Avocado mattresses promote better sleep through breathable, naturally temperature regulated materials, which is so important to our sleep right now. Did I mention there is a mattress to fit your needs too? Avocado offers gentle to firm to plush mattress comfort and support. Take their quiz to find out which mattress and comfort option is right for you. Avocado stands by their products too. They offer easy financing options with Affirm, sleep trials up to 1 year, and options to try before you buy. Head to avocadomattress.com today and save up to 10% on certified organic mattresses. Dream of better.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to fling your favorite fishing rod around. And here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance covers your boat and your belongings. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to high-five someone. But not while you're holding your fishing rod. That's a prized possession. So hold on tight with both hands and keep it covered through boat insurance. Get more with GEICO.
The discussion about scent theory and different dogs' abilities sometimes was convoluted and discussed possibilities of cross-contamination and the ability to do a vehicle trail. And basically, all they were just asking them everything they could about dogs and trying to get him to, you know, basically discredit himself, I guess. It was said that even the best dogs have only about an 80% accuracy. Bradley admitted that either his or Anderson's dog, which did not alert on one of the launch ramps, could have been right. So there you go. Moving on to defense witness number 7, Kevin Bartolotto in Garagos is doing the examination. Now, Bertolucto, you heard me talk about before, is an investigator for the Stanislaus County District Attorney's Office. And he first appeared as the prosecution witness, if you can remember through all that. But now defense is calling him back, right? So Garagos starts his examination and by getting to tell the details of a call that Bertolotto received from Chris Clark in response to a Modesto B article in the newspaper that said the prosecution planned to provide evidence that Lacey had stopped walking 2 months before she disappeared. Now, Clark offered his own eyewitness testimony to contradict the theory. Working for a family living on Encina, the man saw Lacey walk a McKenzie on Encina at least 5 times after October the 15th. He also saw the two of them in the park and said one of the family members would talk to Lacey when she walked McKenzie. He last saw Lacey and McKenzie walking 2 weeks before Christmas, and he said he knew it was Lacey he had seen because on the night of the 24th, he and the family he worked for on Encina brought coffee to the Peterson home, I guess after she went missing, y'all. Okay. So again, they're simply saying that Lacey was physically able to be in the park and be abducted. So let's go to Thursday, October the 21st. And the defense witness number 7, again, Kevin Bertolotto. Again, the direct is done by Garagos, and this time he's going to get cross-examined by Rick DeStasi. Now, when Ron Gransky made the 911 call on December 24th, he said the husband was golfing all day. He told Bertolotto he thought he got that information from Sharon. Now, when he interviewed Sharon, she said she assumed Scott was golfing because that was normal for him. Now, Bertolotto is the one Kevin Servais called to change her timeline after her preliminary hearing testimony. And the judge instructed the jurors that they may consider prior inconsistent statements when weighing a witness's credibility. Servais also informed Bertolotto that she identified the time of her ATM transaction at Bank of America at 10:53 a.m. So, DeStasio raises issues of the Clark tip credibility by noting that Clark had a substance abuse problem and could remember dates in relation to just getting out of a rehab center. So, basically throwing shade on him as fuck, right? I don't even know why they would use this dude if you know he's a doper. But whatever, I guess, you know, dope heads see bad shit too. But he also raised issues with Officer Phillips' testimony by asking Bertolotto if there were any short, stocky Modesto detectives at the autopsy. And then there was an objection, y'all, and the judge sustained it. And then he specifically asked if either Brocchini or Grogan were there. And guess what? They weren't. I never worked a case where I was a lead that me or my partner did not. One of us might be, still be in the field, but one of you were at the fucking autopsy. And that's just scorched as fuck. So the Stasi has questions on recross. So now the defense went, and then prosecution gets to go again, right? You know, any more questions? Yes, Your Honor, just a few. So this, he went beyond the scope of Garagos direct, which you can't do, but the judge allowed it to remove to need the need to call Bertolotte back for the prosecution's rebuttal case, right? No big deal. No smoking gun is what it is. All right. Let's move on. Defense witness number 8, Ricardo Cordova, who is a neighbor in Garagos on direct. This time, Brigitte Fledger is doing the cross-examination. So Cordova, who is now a judge with the Stanislaus County Superior Court, but back in December 2002, he was an attorney in the public defender's office. And at 10:15 p.m. on December 23rd, someone knocked at his door asking for money to help his girlfriend who was stranded in the foothills. And another neighbor had the same experience. So a white station wagon was reported parked within 150 feet of Peterson's home. Oh, Lord. Cordova was currently working on a case with a similar situation as an MO for people that were casing a neighborhood, y'all, looking for opportunities to commit crimes. Cordova told Reed Noor about the man, but when Officer Reed canvassed the area, he didn't seem to know about it. Cordova is also the one that saw the pair of flip-flop sandals in the front yard of the Peterson home near the street. Uh-oh. He saw them there the 25th and the 26th and called them to the attention of the two officers. But they were not collected as evidence. You talk about fucking scorched. I'll tell you about it in just a second. Cordova didn't know whether they were related to Lacey's disappearance or not. That's kind of strange. You got sandals in the front yard of the home where the lady went missing. Yeah. Bertolotto had in his report that Cordova said he thought they were unrelated to Lacey's disappearance. But Cordova called bullshit on that and said he did not tell him that because he didn't know whether they were related or not. And Cordova also told the jury about Lacey's civic involvement and his concern about her boldness. Now, remember, you got the people across the street robbing the house, and supposedly she approached them, the jailhouse phone calls, all this shit. Holy shit, if they snatched her up, I mean, if you pick me up, I got flip-flops on, they're going to fall off, right? Fladger, the prosecution, brought up that she was engaged with Scott in those activities that had Cordova concerned. Okay, I don't know about that. Oh, he's talking about her being bold in the civic duty shit. So let's talk, I mean, again, y'all, this is scorched as fuck. This dude, now, certainly, if you grow up as a defense attorney, and that's what it's called growing up before you become a judge, you're going, you know, you're a judge, you're supposed to be unbiased. I found that judges who come from the public defender side generally will give more weight or make the cops prove just a little bit more, you know, human biases, confirmation bias, whatever you want to call it. But this motherfucker is a judge and gets up in front of the jury and says, hey, I told them about the sandals in their yard. And I mean, what the fuck? Why wouldn't you collect them? And then you find out about all the shit that, I mean, the burger across the street and all that shit. Why wouldn't you collect them? I mean, if they were Lacey's and you collect, if they weren't Lacey's and you collected them and you're on the defense, you're fucked. If they were Lacey's and you collected them and you test them, let's say for DNA or whatever, or they're identified by Scott as being hers. I mean, Scott could have thrown them out there. I don't know, but it's just scorched. I mean, another simple, seemingly simple fucking thing that wasn't done. But where you really fucked up is you put it in the report that this now judge, who was then an attorney, that tells you that they're not related. You don't believe they're related to the crime. What the fuck does it make a fucking difference whether this attorney believes it's related to the crime or not? Right? They're in the fucking crime scene. They're on the property. And one of the main theories is she was abducted by these people when she interrupted robbery. Wow. That's fucked up. That's scorched. Let's continue. Defense witness number 9. Mr. Charles Michael March, and it's Garagos and Harrishaw this time doing the directing the cross. So before March testifies, the court had to certify him as an expert in gynecology and infertility and reproductive matters. And March says that he reviewed all Lacey's medical reports and the reports and testimony of Lacey's doctors. And Dr. Peterson, not no relation, y'all, to Scott, the forensic pathologist, and Dr. Galloway, the forensic anthropologist, and Dr. DeVore and Renee Thomason, Renee Thomason's testimony on the day Lacey had a positive on her home pregnancy test. And he accepted DeVore's measurements and age dating, but not as an interpretation of when Connor must have died. So he's not going totally against the other doctor. But he is refuting his interpretation of when Connor died. He testified that the earliest Connor could have died is December the 29th, with the rain spreading into January. Now, Harris didn't like this. He refutes March's testimony on several grounds. He questioned why March is the only one out of all the doctors and experts who came up with a different frame on the time of death, y'all. March says he's not aware that either Peterson or Galloway came up with death dates, and that Galloway's age estimates fall within his time range, not DeVore's. Now, Harris, you know, got to discredit this fucker, right? This would so far go to the theory that she was kidnapped, and maybe they kept the baby alive or whatever. Harris brought up the possibility that Connor was a small baby, but Mark says, that would extend the date out even further than December 29th. When the Harris is pissed now, he's trying to totally discredit March in front of the jury. And he had his emphasis on the June 9th pregnancy test in determining Lacey's conception, saying the only evidence of such was when Renee Thomason gave that in a statement. Garagos counters with information about other family member statements to the media that Lacey called all of her friends early on June the 9th to announce her pregnancy. And, well, you know, you're up against people who generally do these kind of prosecutions for a living. And if you remember the judge saying, you decide how much weight and believability this witness have. So it's the prosecution's job to fuck him up. And they did. He became flustered. His answers went way in above and beyond what the scope of the question was. But no matter what, in the end, he said the earliest date Connor died is December 29th, which would have meant that Lacey would have had to been abducted and couldn't have been dumped in the bay. And if you believe this motherfucker, there is your reasonable doubt. I think them making him flustered and everything, if I'm sitting on a jury, again, that goes back to the believability of the witness. So I don't know. All right. Moving on to defense witness number 10, Detective Craig Grogan. And it's Garagos on direct and Brigitte Fladger on cross. Now, Grogan had in his notes sharing a statement that Lacey called family and friends around 7 a.m. on June the 9th of 2002 to announce her pregnancy, and remarked that he did not come across anything else in his investigation that suggests anything else. I mean, what the fuck does it matter when, man, I'm thinking out of my head, what the fuck does it matter when she called family members to say I guess it does matter if they, because they're trying to figure out how old Connor would have been post-mortem, and I guess they have to use conception date. So my bad. Anyway, whatever. I think it's a little bit of overkill. And anyway, so the Flagler didn't ask any questions about this in her cross. I think she thinks it's stupid as I do. Gargos got in a number of pictures taken on the December 27th and February 18th of the Peterson home or Covina. They call it the Covina home. There were 27 pictures, which included a recipe for French toast. The 18th picture included items of sentimental value, as one of the functions of that search warrant was to determine if Scott had disposed of any sentimental items. Also included was a picture of a camouflage jacket, which was sent in for testing but had negative results. And again, all the shit they sent, some of the most important pieces in my mind, scorched, that they didn't send. But then another camouflage jacket was seized in the December 27th search and sent for testing with negative results. Scott said he wore a camouflage jacket to the marina on the 24th. All right, real quick, y'all, I swear to you, I have 14 fucking camouflage jackets, right? Everything from high-end Sitka to Walmart specials. So, I mean, they seized two jackets. I guarantee you Scott Peterson's smart enough that he's going to be rolling Lacey's dead body on him. He'd have got rid of that jacket, but neither here nor there. Gargos questioned Detective Grogan about him asking the Rocha family and friends to see if they remembered anything unusual about Scott once they knew about Amber Fry. And Gargos went through all the times Grogan met with Sharon or talked with her on the phone, and she didn't say Scott told her in the first call that Lacey was missing. He also noted that Detective Grogan's awareness of an interview Sharon did the night before she found out about Amber, when she said it was she that first used the words missing, not Scott. So, you know, remember that. And it was her husband, the one that actually called the cops. Detective Grogan testified that the information given to them by Harvey Kemple about Scott going to the country club to golf was proven inaccurate. Scott was tailed to the club once by surveillance at 5:15 in the evening and only was there 30 to 45 minutes. Whatever. I mean, that's when he's in San Diego, I guess, and they're saying he's getting ready to run for the border. So Gargos noted other witnesses that came forward with new information about Scott after Amber was revealed. And y'all, that's when they shut down the center at the hotel and all that, and the cops' phones start blowing up. But Gargos gets in that all these other witnesses that came forward, their shit was proven to be false. All right, and they introduced exhibit DAT and U1 through 12. Y'all, it's just all shit like photos of the nurseries and photograph albums and recipe for creme brulee French toast, the table with maternity books, photos of Scott and Lacey, photos of the kitchen, glass, whatever the fuck, photos of a recipe for Eggs Benedict, close up a French toast recipe. What the fuck? I think in the warehouse and photos of camo jacket, blah, 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 whatever. To me, if I'm on the jury, I'm like, you need to hurry the fuck up. Now let's go to defense witness number 11, Detective John Bueller of the Modesto Police Department. And Mark Gargos is doing direct, and David Harris is doing cross this time. Gargos' main point with Bueller was recounting the interviews he did of people at the Salon to determine what Lacey was wearing the night of the 23rd. He interviewed four people on February 4th, and they all gave different descriptions. He went back to the Salon on March the 27th, which is almost 2 months later, and to interview Moore and to re-interview Perry, and also showed Perry digital photos of the clothes found in Lacey's home. And besides not agreeing with each other, the people Bueller interviewed did not agree with the group that Grogan interviewed. Okay. The exhibits introduced y'all were a wiretap between Scott and his brother Joe on April 18th at 7 or 8 a.m., whatever. Yeah, you know what? I'm going to tell you about this. Let me see. I'm going to tell you about this phone call real quick and then we'll end this week's. So this is the wiretap conversation on April the 18th, 2003. And both the defense and the prosecution agreed that this is a valid tape and it was definitely Scott and his brother. But then that stopped Jacobson from being recalled as a defense witness to certify it. The conversation, again, was picked up by the wiretap that Jacobson had running on Scott. And the call took place at 7:08 a.m. between Scott and his brother, Joe. The main points of the conversation were, Scott said, "I'm not going to join y'all for golf that day." And Scott said he was being followed by private investigators and they had stopped and he asked them who they were, but they wouldn't say. Y'all remember the cops said, "Fuck that." He asked us what agency we were with. Also, they talked about how quick the bodies might be identified. And there was so much hype out there. And remember, this is after Lacey and Connor washed up. They also, Joe, the brother, mentioned seeing pics in the Mod B, the Modesto B, of all the people putting flowers and stuffed animals on the lawn at the Covina house. And Joe said, "We pray and pray. We don't know what else to do." And the tone of the conversation indicated neither Joe nor Scott believe the bodies would be that of Lacey and Connor. I don't know. I don't know about, I mean, maybe Joe's, but how the fuck do you know if what the tone of their conversation is? You know, that's again, one of those things that you would have to assume by the judge's instruction to give it whatever weight and merit that you think it's valid. So, all right, moving along much faster. We are going to be done with the defense side. Look, there's some good shit in here, y'all. Some scorch stuff. And Gergos, he's no fucking slouch. I mean, Scott had a good defense team. He can't say that he didn't. But you know, Scott's got a lot of scorch shit, and his defense team did some scorch shit, and I'm gonna tell you about it coming up. And then we're gonna get into the really, really moving death penalty parts of the case. But this hopefully will be done with the defense side next week. And thank you for liking and listening and sharing. And y'all, hashtag justice for Haley. If that episode and that series drops on Fridays, so important. So important. This week's one that dropped yesterday, holy shit. It's, you know, Brooks in the police interrogation room for at least the first hour or something that he was in there. And he never asked about Haley. Never asked. And laughs and is joking and everything else, motherfucker. Anyway, y'all please continue to like and share that hashtag justice for Haley, Patreon convicts, just like these episodes, the originals, which I will be going back to some originals when we get done with this original, my stories, you get the commercial free early releases on every show. Now, even Cindy and I show True Crime Time 4, right? Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you get them commercial free early releases. And it's Christmas time. There's a lot of commercials in the show. That's how we make our living, right? But if you want to be a patron or a convict, you can go to patreon.com, search Real Life Real Crime, or go to the App Store and download the Real Life Real Crime community app for free. We got like 30 some thousand members in there, and that's where the forums are. in all the episodes and the merch store and all that. And then we also have a subscriber level in there. And it has not only Haley's case, all these hours of police video and stuff that don't make it into the podcast, and different points of views and, you know, autopsy photos, all that stuff. But it has from other cases that I've done in the past, and over 25 more episodes of original Real Life Real Crime. So y'all go check it out. And if you're going to message me about working your family's member's case, and I get them every freaking day, and I know there's a lot of y'all that are out there hurting, and just message me there. All right. Or Woody@reallifeforcrime.com, and I'll get it. And we'll, you know, at least I'll respond to you. All right. That concludes today's episode. LOPA, Louisiana Oregon Procurement Agency. You don't have to be a lifer from Louisiana. You could be a lifer from West Virginia. And just go to LOPA.org, fill out the 2-minute questionnaire, and become a hero. Give the gift of life and sight and all that great stuff they do. And they're a nonprofit, y'all, and my jam, and I'm going to keep supporting them. People are dying every day when waiting on organ transplants. And if it comes to the point where you can, in a position to donate your organs, you're not going to give a fuck because you're going to be on your way out anyway, right? So anyway, I'm Woody Overton, your host of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast. Until next time or ever, don't let me catch you down on Murder Bite. Peace.
Yeah, the rights remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to an attorney prior to or during any question. If you can't afford one, the court will appoint one for you. Do you understand your rights?
When the wolf is at your door, you run in zone, that's for sure.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.